Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
Thanks for listening. My name's Renee Giacchino. I'm corporate counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom. And joining us now on Your Turn is Scott Sweat. He's the co-author of a brand new book out, one that should be purchased for everyone's Christmas stocking. It's called To Set the Record Straight. Actually, it's big enough you can put it under the tree. It'll make a nice gift. It's called To Set the Record Straight, How Swift Boat Veterans, POWs, and the New Media Defeated John Kerry. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, Mr. Sweat. We appreciate it.
Hi, Renee. Thanks for having me on.
Well, this has been described as the definitive account of the ad hoc political movement that dominated the 2004 presidential campaign. And I want to start out with the title so that we can all understand what it is that we're talking about when we talk about the new media. How do you define the new media?
Well, I would define the new media as any channel of communication to the public that is not controlled by the traditional media. So I would include certainly talk radio, the internet, various forms of paid-for TV advertising, and the like.
How about the YouTube of today? Is that, would that obviously be considered the new media?
Sure, absolutely.
All right. Can you give us a little history on the Swift Boat Veterans, how they got started and how you got started working with them? Because you were intimately involved with that organization and the great work that they did back in 2004.
I got started because I bought a book called The New Soldier, which was written by John Kerry and his Vietnam Veterans Against the War back in 1971. And it was an account of... It was kind of a photo essay of one of the protests that they did in Washington, D.C., and it had some of the accounts that that they claimed to have witnessed or participated in various war crimes and tried to, by extension, say that that was standard U.S. policy. And so I had the thought that, well, I'll just buy this book and put part of it up on the Internet and people can see it. There were rumors that the book was very hard to find and so forth. But as I dug into it, I got more and more interested in what these guys had done in terms of a propaganda campaign. And so I wound up creating a website called WinterSoldier.com, which was a fairly detailed examination of the war crimes propaganda effort. That put me in touch with Dr. Jerry Corsi, who wrote into the site and started doing articles. And then he introduced me to John O'Neill, who was working with the Swift Boat Veterans. And then John invited me to rewrite their own website at SwiftVets.com. So that's kind of how I got connected with the effort.
Now some claim that the Swift Boat Veterans were actually an instrument of the Bush campaign. That's why you wrote this book, right? How much truth is there to that statement?
Well, none. That was the counterclaim made by the Kerry campaign at the time, and repeated uncritically by CBS News and various other subsidiaries of the DNC. But in fact, it was a veterans effort from the get-go. I'm not sure that a lot of people are aware that right after the election, the Federal Election Commission did a detailed investigation into whether the Swift Vets had acted illegally in coordinating with the Bush administration. And they went through thousands of my emails, for example. And I can only imagine the forensic depth with which they processed the Swift Vet leader's information. But their conclusion was there was no illegal collaboration between the campaign and the Swift Vets.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, it really brought about a whole new way underfoot, certainly with 527 organizations. I mean, as the title said, the Swift Boat Veterans, the POWs, and the New Media Defeated John Kerry. And it certainly caused some interesting changes in federal election campaign activities with these 527 organizations. Have you been following the evolution of that ever since, say, the FEC investigation subsided with the Swift votes?
Yes. Well, the all of the major 527s that played a role in the 2004 campaign were punished to various degrees by the FECs with large fines. I think it's accurate to say that there are powerful forces in both parties that would like to not see that form of political free speech continue.
I like the way you word that because that's exactly what it is. I mean, it is political free speech, and granted, in some instances, it may be bringing to the public's attention, something as it relates to a candidate, but it does as well to issues, you know? I mean, and I think it's, you know, very, very important not to muzzle that form of speech, particularly, you know, when, as was concluded in, as you mentioned, with the FEC and the Swift Boat veterans, when there is no coordination between the campaign and, you know, the candidate or the candidate and the organization. Let me ask you this, Mr. Sweat. Kerry is not running this time around, so why set the record straight now?
Well, this is really more an appeal to history than it is an attempt to further punish Senator Kerry for his various transgressions. We're trying to set the record straight about what happened in 2004, much the same way that the veterans who opposed Kerry tried to set the record straight about his activities in Vietnam and after he came home. I suppose you could look at the book as an antidote to the sloganeering that's been done by the left since the 2004 election, where they use the term swift boating as a kind of generic term to mean unfair or nasty campaigning.
Yeah, it's interesting how swift boating has become a verb.
Well, they lost all the major debates in 2004. That's why the Swift Vets were so lethally effective from a political point of view. They demonstrated to virtually everyone's satisfaction that Kerry was not in Cambodia fighting Khmer Rouge on Christmas Day of 1968, as he claimed dozens of times throughout his career, and so forth and so on.
When you first started working with the Swift Boat veterans, did you ever imagine that you'd end up writing a book that, you know, is heavily a 400-page book with
no,
significant...
No, I had no idea. That was not part of the plan. In fact, I was kind of at odds with their approach when I first met them. I thought that the right place to focus attention was on Kerry's remarkable anti-war activities and how thoroughly coordinated they were with the leaders of the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War. But the Swift Vets had literally dozens of eyewitnesses who were willing to go on the record and say that Kerry had massively falsified his accounts of what had happened in Vietnam, and they felt strongly that that should also be part of the story. And they succeeded in convincing me that was the case.
Well, I think the Swift Boats succeeded in convincing a lot of folks that Kerry grossly inflated his combat record in Vietnam, and certainly anyone who doesn't believe that needs to read this book because you've got the proof in here. How important do you think it is that whoever is president serve the United States?
In the military?
In the military, yes.
I don't think it's crucial. I do think it's crucial that whoever is the commander-in-chief, the president of the United States, has a respect for the military and an appreciation for the sacrifices that members of the military make. And I think that someone that, for his own personal aggrandizement, was willing to make false claims that the military was systematically committing atrocities doesn't fit that description.
Well, we are now just days, I was going to say weeks away, but I think we're getting down to where we can call it days away from the Iowa caucus. What are you working on now?
Well, mostly the book at the moment. I'm also affiliated with an investigation that's looking at some campaign irregularities on the part of Hillary Clinton during 2000. That's hillcap.org.
Hillcap.org. I neglected...
That's the Hillary Clinton Accountability Project.
Hillcap.org. All right, we'll have to check out that website during the break. I neglected to ask you in the beginning, and I like to do that a couple times through the program. The book is called To Set the Record Straight, and you've got a website dedicated to it, correct?
Surprisingly, it's called TosetTheRecordStraight.com. You can also get to it at TSTRS.com for short. And right now, that's the only place that the book is available for purchase.
It's only available through that website. That's TSTRS.com or
right.
TosetTheRecordStraight.com. And actually, when you get on that website, for folks out there who are, you know, thinking, boy, is this something someone in my family might enjoy, you have a chapter of the book available online free for viewing, correct?
Yes, that's the chapter titled Rather's Ruin and the Rise of the Pajama Hadeen. And it tells, for the first time, the complete story of how ordinary citizens were able to detect that Dan Rather's National Guard documents, or ostensible National Guard documents about George Bush, were in fact crude forgeries. And what's interesting about that is not just that CBS ran with this, but every news organization in the country put it on the front page or made it top news on the evening news broadcast. And these are organizations that have boast that they have thousands of researchers and fact-checkers, yet they miss the fact that that the documents which the story was based on were forgeries, and that was discovered by ordinary citizens working online.
Unbelievable. You know, so I also don't forget, and we do have a caller on the line. We'll take his call in just a minute if that's okay. Tell us about your charitable efforts with respect to the book, because I think that's important, particularly people who may be thinking about buying copies as gifts.
Well, we are going to donate a percentage of the profits from the book to charities that support veterans who are wounded in either Iraq or Afghanistan or members of their families.
Okay, we're going to talk about those soldiers in just a minute. I've got a couple questions. Is it okay if we take a question from a caller?
Of course.
Go ahead, Miami Ed. It's your turn.
Yeah, boy, two fantastic guests, Renee.
Thanks, Ed.
You're outdoing yourself every time.
Thank you.
It is my understanding that the gentleman who was the Special Forces guy that was picked up by Kerry, that he was quite well paid for doing his appearances.
I don't know if that's the case. You're referring to Jim Rassman, who is at the center of the so-called No Man Left Behind incident.
Yeah, the figure that I heard was a quarter of a mil.
I can't confirm anything of the sort.
That was a question that I could not understand. That nobody from Fox, nobody from any of the asked the guy, how much are you being paid for this? Of course, that wouldn't be a reason why he would do things a certain way.
Well, I'm not sure that merely asking him that question would produce a useful answer.
Well, I think it's important. You know, they always ask how much are you making on this when they ask conservative so forth. Also, on this Dan Rather, it should be mentioned that George Jr. volunteered twice to go to Vietnam, and the simple reason that he was not picked was A, his father, I think, was the UN ambassador, and B, there was only four 102s in Southeast Asia, and all four of them were in Bangkok.
Yeah, that's my understanding, is that they were phasing the F-102s out of the picture. It should be noted, that the F-102 is an extremely dangerous airplane and killed a lot of people.
Yeah.
It was hardly the equivalent of dodging the draft or something like that.
The Queen of Thailand liked them, and that's why they had them fly every morning around there. Another point that I would like to make, that if truly that, and this was not mentioned by any of the news media, that if Kerry was really a true believer in all his statements that he had made anti-Vietnam, why was he all of a sudden changing?
Well, and clearly, if he believed that the military that he served was peopled with war criminals and officers that insisted that that ordered atrocities to be committed, then it's hard to square that with his claims to be proud of his service. But I think you have to look at the context of the times in which these events occurred. In 1971, Kerry was trying to start a political career, and being virulently anti-war in Massachusetts was a good way to accomplish that.
So
the military is now the most trusted institution in America, so now Kerry's a war hero.
Anti-war, he could have joined the military and served as a non-combatant. And, you know, and this was an option to people who wanted to get drafted.
Well, he didn't apparently really want to get into the thick of things. At the time he joined the Swift boat operation, it was not doing the kind of up the rivers patrolling that was so dangerous. The mission changed after he signed up.
Okay, my friend. I hope to read your book. I'm going to go on the internet and look at it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ed. We appreciate the call. What's very interesting, maybe you already are aware of this, Mr. Sweat. Have you met one of the Swift boat veterans? His name is Grant Hibbard.
Yes, I've met Mr. Hibbard.
Yes, he lives right here in our area. So, I mean, when
he was Kerry's immediate commander and was involved in, actually, he refused to sign off on the paperwork for his first Purple Heart.
Yeah, well, he is right here. So for folks who don't believe, as I mentioned, if you don't believe, buy this book and you'll become a believer. But also we've got one of the Swift Boat veterans right here in our area. I need to take a very short break. Can you stay with us through the break? I've got a number of other questions going into the book, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Okay, we'll be right back after this short break. We are talking with Scott Sweat. He's the co-author of a book called To Set the Record Straight, How Swift Boat Veterans, POWs, and the New Media Defeated John Kerry. While we're at the break, if you're sitting at your computer, go ahead and pull up their website. It's called tosettherecordstraight.com. You can also get to it by the initials TSTRS.com. Pull that website up. There's a chapter available online for free of the book, as well as your ability to purchase the book right there on that website. We'll finish the interview when we come back from this short break. Please stay tuned.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's talk radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
We're back with Scott Sweat. He's the co-author of To Set the Record Straight, How Swift Boat Veterans, POWs, and the New Media Defeated John Kerry. Go ahead, Mark. It's your turn.
Yes, thank you, Renee. Mr. Sweat, thank you for attempting to fight back against the people that are twist the truth here. You know, I bought the Unfit for Command and read it, and I had a chance to ask Dr. Jerome Corsi a question. And I just chose what I thought was a very benign question. Was I understand that the Swift Boat squadrons were to stand and fight when fired upon, and to call in help if they needed to, but they were not to when they fired upon, to just immediately retreat, which was John Kerry's, when he was with his own boats, the 45 boat, and I forget the other boat, was to just take off at first and then assess the situation and maybe or maybe not come back. And Dr. Corsi just, he wouldn't answer that question. I was really kind of stunned with that. What do you have to say about that?
I should explain that Unfit for Command was split into two primary topic areas. The part that Dr. Corsi worked on was the involvement of John Kerry in the anti-war movement and his coordination with leaders of the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong. John O'Neill wrote and managed all the material that had to do with Kerry in Vietnam. As to your specific question, I think you have it exactly right. The doctrine was to open up on the shoreline if they were ambushed or attacked and call for help. They had other resources available in the form of Seahawk helicopters Sea Wolf helicopters and various other things.
Yes, you're out there looking for a guerrilla outfit, and then when they find you or you find them, there's no sense in running away. I mean, that's what
you're trying to find. Yeah, it was exactly to contact the enemy.
Okay, well, thank you for your good work. I suppose your book covers the meetings in Paris with the North Vietnamese. Is that right?
It covers various aspects of how the Vietnam veterans against the war worked with the North Vietnamese and how they followed their talking points and even took direction from them. We have some internal communications that we found from the group that show how they admitted that the North Vietnamese called the shots for their group.
Sir, I'm losing you on my cell. I'm going to hang up. But would you address the General Giap's words regarding the anti-war movement? I'll go ahead and hang up.
Thanks, Mark, for the call.
There's a quote by General Giap that is kind of knocking around the internet, which I think is probably apocryphal. It suggests that we were just days from winning the war. But I think the larger fact of the matter is that the North Vietnamese depended heavily on the domestic insurgency, the anti-war movement in the United States to negate what was on its way to becoming a U.S. victory.
Okay, thank you. We've got another caller. Go ahead, Dean. It's your turn.
I have just one question, and I'm not disagreeing with anything that you've said thus far. And I'm a 59-year-old Vietnam veteran. I've fought in the Naval War in Vietnam. I started in Da Nang. I finished up at An Toi, where John Kerry was. But did I hear you say that it was... What specific time did you think that the swift boats actually started doing river patrols, Operation Game Warden.
When did they start doing river patrols?
Yeah, because you said that Carey didn't, when he volunteered for swift boats, they weren't involved in river patrols.
I was referring basically to Operation Market Time, which was the decision under then-Captain Hoffman to take the battle up into the Mekong Delta, up the rivers, and try and clear the Viet Cong out of that area.
Well, that was part of Market Time. We had 25 Coast Guard cutters over there at the same time.
Well, yes, I understand. That was a large
operation. The Game Warden was further up the river, but the swift boats were involved. Carey got there in 68. The swift boats got there in 66. And Market Time was primarily offshore. Game Warden was primarily up the rivers, and the swift boaters were there and going up and down those rivers long before 68.
My understanding was that the majority of the operations that the swift boats did prior to 68 was not river patrols, that it was more coastal work. If you can correct me on that, I'd be very interested in hearing that.
Okay, well, unfortunately, we've only got about 30 seconds left of this interview, and so I'm sorry, Dean. It looks like my next guest is trying to call in, so we may be able to continue this in a couple of minutes, but I'll have to let you know after the break. But just in case we can, I do want to thank Mr. Sweat for coming on this afternoon. The book is called To Set the Record Straight, How Swift Boat Veterans, POWs, and the New Media Defeated John Carey. Dean, I'm sorry you didn't get to finish your question, but I do have to take a CNN break, but we'll be right back. Please stay tuned.